This is a Kim Monson National News Briefing. Supreme Court expands presidential power to fire officials, shields the Fed. In its just completed term, the court freed the president to remove officials across the independent agencies and overturned a 91-year-old precedent, yet it left the Federal Reserve's protection standing. Constitutional scholar Rob Natolson walked through both rulings on The Kim Monson Show. Natolson, a senior fellow in constitutional jurisprudence at the Independence Institute in Denver, told listeners the two rulings ran in opposite directions on the same underlying question: how far the president's control extends over the agencies Congress built to operate at arm's length from the White House. He has tracked the pattern for years and returns to it often. He last reviewed the earlier stretch of this same term with the show's audience. The larger of the two decisions, Natolson said, was the one that reshaped presidential authority. So the constitutionalist victory is, the president can remove personnel on almost all the executive agencies, he said on the show. It overruled a 1935 precedent to the contrary. That case was Trump versus Slaughter. In Slaughter, decided 6-3 on the merits on June 29, the court held that an officer who exercises executive power and falls within the president's general administrative control must be removable by the president at will. Chief Justice Roberts, writing for the majority, closed the door on the precedent that had stood in the way. "If anything more is left of Humphreys, we overrule it," he wrote, formally ending Humphreys' Executor v. United States, the 1935 ruling that had allowed Congress to limit the removal of Federal Trade Commission members to cause. The reasoning reaches the multi-member agencies that wield executive power, among them the FTC, the Federal Communications Commission, the National Labor Relations Board, and the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Scotus Blog estimates that roughly 24 independent agencies fall within its practical sweep, though the opinion itself declined to fix the outer bounds. Natolson placed the ruling in a long arc. Through the progressive era, he said, Congress created agencies that were insulated from popular control and became the fourth branch of government, a structure the Constitution never contemplated. The companion case pointed the other way. Now, in another case, Trump versus Cook, though, the court carved out an exception for the Federal Reserve Board, Natolson said. It said the Federal Reserve Board is basically a national bank, and national banks go back to the 18th century, and they have a tradition of being independent. That tracks the court's own account. Chief Justice Roberts wrote that accepting the government's position would, in effect, transform the Federal Reserve's for-cause protection into at-will employment, a reading he found out of step with the statute Congress enacted and with the nation's tradition of central banking kept clear of political interference. Justice Kavanaugh, concurring, invoked the court's earlier description of the Fed as a quasi-private, uniquely structured entity that stands in the distinct historical tradition of the first and second banks of the United States. The practical result is that Fed Governor Lisa Cook remains in office while her removal challenge continues. The cases arrived in different postures, and the difference matters for what each one settled. Slaughter was a full decision on the merits. Cook reached the justices on the court's interim docket as a request to pause a lower court order that had kept Cook in her seat. By a vote of 5-4, the court denied that request, finding the government has not shown that it is likely to prevail on the legal arguments in its stay application. Because the ruling resolved only the emergency application, it leaves open whether the president may ultimately remove Cook once the case is fully litigated. The lineup shifted between the two. The six justices who formed the Slaughter majority fractured in Cook, with Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Kavanaugh joining Justices Sotomayor, Kagan, and Jackson to protect the Fed, while Justices Thomas, Alito, Gorsuch, and Barrett dissented. Natolson read the term the same way, calling the Fed outcome the liberal result and the removal ruling the constitutionalist one, and he cited the split as evidence that the court behaves less like a 6-3 block than a 3-3-3 bench. Natolson made clear he was not persuaded by the Fed carve-out. The Federal Reserve is created by Congress, and I think it's rather clearly part of the executive branch, he said. That's why I'm saying that the court's reasoning is not very persuasive. He grounded the point in the Constitution's assignment of the money power to Congress and argued that the Fed, like the Mint, carries out that power as an executive body. His position lines up with the four justices who dissented in Cook. He also allowed for the practical worry likely driving the majority, suggesting the justices sought to head off a collapse of the monetary system by keeping the central bank out of direct political control. And now, Kim's perspective. For years, Robnay Tulson has warned this audience that the administrative state grew into something the founders never sketched, a fourth branch answerable to almost no one. This term, the court finally said the president may hold those agencies accountable, and that is a win for the constitutional design. The Federal Reserve puzzle is harder. Justice Kavanaugh calls it a creature of its own history, and Nay Tulson calls it part of the executive branch that ought to answer to the president like the rest. That is the debate worth having, because the question of who controls the money and who controls the agencies is the question of who governs. Watch this one closely. The Cook case is far from over. For the full article with sources and links, visit kimmonson.com. This has been a Kim Monson National News Briefing.